This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
You can hit us up on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Yes, I said Arvydas Sabonis. I meant Domantas Sabonis. Forgive me, I've got antibiotics coursing through my veins right now. I had the wrong Sabonis. That's the old Arvydas is the old man. I got it. We got a lot of people asking us, hey, any buzz from the combine, Texans related? Not really. This is the least buzzy combine I can remember in a long time.
I'd say Gray Zabal is getting a lot of love for the guard out of North Dakota State, who was impressive at the Senior Bowl. I think there's people are super hyped up about him and excited about him. I think as a guard, there's a lot to get excited about. But he had a very impressive workout. So because he's been mocked to the Texans at times, meanwhile, Tyler Booker is the player who's most often mocked to the Texans, the guard out of Alabama. He didn't have a great workout, so there's starting to be ways to perhaps separate some of these guys, I suppose. That's an interesting one, because Tyler, okay, you're Nick Caserio. Tyler, you know he loves guys from big schools. Tyler Booker has played awesome consistently for a long time at the University of Alabama, but didn't work out so hot. Gray Zabal has been a really good player at North Dakota State and had some good moments at the Senior Bowl, but he worked out like a fiend. Who do you think Nick goes for?
Tyler Booker.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's even close. Nick has very little respect for the workouts. Like, I don't think he cares about the workouts.
Nick doesn't really have a lot of respect for any one individual thing. I think that's his whole methodology, is that everything, there's no one big thing, but except that at the top of everything is, it's a multitude of things, which is just how have you played football.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he likes big school guys. He gets to see them play good football consistently versus good competition for more than just 1 week in Alabama.
Yep, I agree.
In Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Derek Stingley Jr. did an in-house interview for the Texans website it's only about 3 or 4 minutes long, but he had some really good thoughts. Stingley's gotten so much better as a quote over the last year or so. Here's Derek Stingley Jr. on being named All-Pro this season.
Being All-Pro, it's cool. It's cool to hear.
Derek Stingley Jr., first-team All-Pro.
Kalen, he been calling me that since training camp. But I'm like, dude, why you keep saying that? But at the same time, just with anything else, you still got to prepare the same. You still got to go out there and show, who you are. That's my mentality with anything, good or bad. You just got to continue doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing about Stingley is he'd be the last guy I would worry about success getting to his head.
Yes.
Because he just has zero appetite for the spotlight. He just likes playing football. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like a football monk. I think he'd be happy if he could just wear a long monk's robe and watch film at night, and then he has to go out in public to practice football and play football. But in his ideal world, he would be playing it out back at the monastery against the best competition with no cameras whatsoever.
No cameras, no TV.
Yeah, so I don't worry.
Dominating all the other monks.
He's the classic guy that it feels like whatever success he has will just fuel him to work even harder. So I'm not worried one bit about that.
Yeah, that was really cool. Now this one's great. This is Derek Stingley Jr. talking about the two rookies from last year, Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock.
Kamari, Kalen, those two guys right there, They say that they see what I'm doing and then they try to do it some type of way. But from the stuff that I take from them, they always 100%, they gonna go get the ball. They just play with a whole nother level of intensity that just, it's crazy, like, just watching it. Like, they're doing stuff that is not normal. Caleb Bullock, 5 picks. Oh, you know, he could have broke a rookie record. Kamari just being his craziness, like, every single play, like, he just doing something. When Kamari got his first pick, like, it was crazy. Like, we all, everybody running from the sideline, like, from the defense running to the end zone, like, and I'm coming from far away, like, just trying to get over there. That was a good moment. That was a great moment.
That was just talking about Kalen Bullock's Kamari Lassiter's first interception this year in the Chicago game.
Yep.
So, yeah, and he's not just giving lip service to his teammates. There, most it's a 3-minute video, and I'd say two minutes of it is him talking about his teammates.
Yeah, it's great.
So, which is really cool, and the young guys especially.
Yeah.
So, I just wish if there's one thing that Kalen, his pro grow tape this year, the tape that D'Amico gives to those guys to work on in the offseason. He's got to be the jugs machine, man. He's got to figure out a way to come down with more of those interceptions.
Yeah, somebody even said that in one of the interviews at the combine. I don't know if it was D'Amico or Nick or somebody else talking about Kalen. I think it might have been D'Amico on Texans All Access. I think it was with John and Mark.
Well, D'Amico at the combine specifically answered a question about Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock.
Oh, okay, so maybe it was there. I just remember him saying, "Yeah, he probably could have had 3 more picks." Kalen Bullock. Like,
he was right there. He's just got to get his hands right. Yeah, and then with Kalen too, he's got to grow into his man body. He's so skinny. Remember the first time we saw Kalen Bullock?
Yeah.
We're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's a skinny dude.
It was at one of the rookie mini camps.
Yeah.
And I remember doing a call in to either the midday show or the afternoon show. You and I were there. And I did a call in. I forget which show it was, but they're like, "What stands out to you?" The very first thing, I'm like, "Kalen Bullock's skinny little chicken legs. That's what stands out. He is a skinny, skinny dude."
He'll perform just fine. It's just that he's also willing to go stick his head into trouble and make tackles. For one, I think it can help him with his tackling ability, but two, just for his own personal safety when he's tackling. I'd like a little bit more ballast there.
We'll get to the last Stingley cut here, but as long as you're bringing this up, Kalen Bullock and his body type, I was thinking about that this week. It was actually John Singleton that had me thinking about this. Like, you know, it feels like there's one guy, more in football than baseball probably, but when you come to camp every year, oftentimes there's a guy like, wow, his body type changed. Now, normally it's not a guy like Singleton who's in his early 30s and has been in ball for 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But like with the Texans, there's at least one ever. Like Will Anderson was the big one last year. Will Anderson shows up in the white tank top at his first press conference. Like, you look like somebody screwed Will Anderson's head on a much bigger body than the guy from last year. I think Kenyon Green was a guy like that last year, like different body type. Is there any chance, does Kalen Bullock have a frame to where we could look at him this year and come into camp and we're like, oh, look at Kalen Bullock. He put on some weight.
No, I think Kalen Bullock will put on weight, but it's almost going to be it's going to be extremely lean weight.
Like Bregman weight.
And it'll just be you might notice it a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be necessarily remarkable or anything. Part of it is he's got like little his joints are small too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't want him necessarily coming back with noticeable body weight gain because that's not the position he plays.
I put together a short list. Kalen was on it. I figured that's what you would probably say about him. Blake Fisher was my number one on the list.
Well, what about C.J. Stroud? Because Nick had talked about him putting on more weight in his legs and getting stronger.
Oh, maybe
so.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it. I was thinking the upper body first. But you may be right.
Stroud was a little bit thicker this year in a good way.
Yep.
I thought he looked sturdier.
Yeah. Maybe I had Damian Pierce on my list here. Maybe he goes bulky again. You know, he kind of trimmed down a little bit after his rookie year.
Yeah.
And maybe he goes bulky.
Nick threw cold water on my take about that. He basically called me stupid. Remember at training camp we were interviewing him and he said, you know, that's dumb. And then I argued with him for a little bit about, I thought that he needed to gain a bit of his weight back.
I remember.
Because he just hadn't been, and he really still hasn't because he hasn't had that many opportunities to do it. But he broke tackles. He wasn't bulldozing guys. He was breaking tackles a lot in his rookie year. And we haven't seen him break a ton of tackles since he lost all that weight.
Should Titus Howard change his body type if he gets moved to left guard?
No. Well, yes. He should look. He showed up at camp looking heavy for a guard, but he played tackle.
He looked out of shape.
Yeah, I think he needs to be, yeah, he just needs to, like, whatever his body weight and body type is, he just didn't look like he was in peak offensive line physical condition.
Last one from Stingley here. This is a really good one on what it means to be a Texan.
Like us as a team, we kind of gel together. Every day we just got closer.
Oh, it's picked off! Stingley got it! Another interception! What an offensive play!
All year around, like your teammates, you know how they talk on the field, you know where they're going to be at. You don't see that with a lot of teams. Of course, people play hard, but you just got to know if you put the Texas uniform on, like you have to play with a certain physicality, the swarm. And that's real. That's what it means to be a Texan for real, for real.
For real, for real. And he even tweeted that. Stingley retweeted this video and said, check out the end of the vid. The Texans' philosophy is just different, I swear. And everybody who knows for real would agree.
Yeah, that's
really,
that's good to hear.
That's really cool to hear as a Texan fan.
You know, D'Amico in the coach's show was talking about why it's important to know what a player's why is. So that comes from a Simon Sinek book back in the day about find your why. Like, what drives you? What's the one thing that really that you subsist on? And D'Amico had mentioned, you know, whether you're doing it for your family or whether you're just truly driven to be great. And he didn't do an exhaustive list. I would put one that's way, way up there, and that maybe a lot of guys don't even consciously know it, but this is something you can hear from teammates or coaches especially, is just simply the guys who have a really deep commitment to their teammates and are driven by, in a game and in a moment, not wanting to let your teammates down. Like, that you just, that you know you have to play a certain way because you love the guys around you. And that's something that it takes multiple guys that are made of the right kind of stuff to have that kind of a culture on the team. And I think they've got a bunch of guys like that on defense.
Yes.
I think that there are a lot of guys that really, like, don't want to let their buddies down. And I haven't seen a ton of that on the offensive side of the ball.
Hopefully we see more of it, man, on the offensive side. Texter points out on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, great support system for Stingley, too, like when his dad joined the podcast with Ryan Clark saying never be complacent. Yeah, his dad's a big influence on him. Big influence
I know just from what scouts were wondering about in the pre-draft process is that when you have a parent who's really, really involved, sometimes that's a great thing, and sometimes it's an atrocious thing. And I think that nobody could know or tell exactly whether it was going to be a good thing for Derek Stingley or not. It seems like they have a pretty good relationship,
yes,
like a genuinely productive relationship when it comes to that side of things. And his father is a genuine resource, as opposed to there's other situations where the father is overbearing and kind of a D-bag or whatever. Like that does not seem to be the case with Derek Stingley.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, you're not even sure if the kid likes the sport when the parent is like,
yeah,
that, you know, and you can tell Stingley just loves football.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very obvious. CJ Stroud. Okay, you want something from the Combine. People asking, any buzz from the Combine? Well, CJ Stroud has a lot of former teammates that are at the Combine. There's still guys at Ohio State that played with CJ Stroud, and they talked about CJ Stroud, and I think a couple of these guys are in play for the Texans. In particular, we've seen a lot of mock drafts that have the Texans taking his former teammate, CJ's former teammate, Emeka Ebuka, the wide receiver. Here's Emeka Ebuka when asked about, have you met with the Texans, and what are your thoughts on CJ Stroud?
I have met with the Texans. We had a great meeting. That was formally. And, you know, CJ and I, you know, obviously, I have a lot of love for the guy. Just to see what he's doing with his faith, too, at the next level, that's something that, you know, I'm just so proud to be able to see as a friend of his. And, you know, our relationship definitely runs deep. I think that, you know, you have a special connection when you're catching passes from him and going for 1,000 yards for a super memorable season. So, playing with him was amazing times for me.
And they're obviously said they're going to be asking CJ about, we're going to hear from Travion Henderson in a minute here. They're going to be asking CJ about these guys. That is the one thing the Texans are very clear about in terms of their evaluation, is they ask teammates about, yeah, guys. I know CJ's a former teammate now, but like when CJ was a draft prospect, they would ask a lot of the Ohio State guys at the Combine about CJ Stroud and vice versa.
Yeah, now, you know, and a lot of teams do that, I guess. It's the best it's the best really feedback you get isn't from the players themselves in their meetings. It's what are their coaches and teammates and equipment staff, the secretary at the football office. Mm-hmm. Like, what do all those people say about somebody? And then you get a really accurate reflection, a more accurate reflection of how they treated people. There's lots of people that can sit in a meeting for 10 minutes and talk about how much they love their teammates and how committed they are to them. And then when you ask their teammates about it, they're like, yeah, he's a good dude. Yeah.
It's funny you say that. Like, that's because that's what I was thinking. Like, okay, do any of these guys that are teammates with each other in college, even if they don't like them, do they say bad things in a meeting? Right. So then you're having to parse out, like, okay, everybody says good things about CJ, but is this guy's good thing actually truth, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's one thing I think good scouts get good at is reading between the lines. Yes. On stuff like that.
Yeah.
The coaches are going to be really hesitant. College coaches are going to be really hesitant to just flat out sell a guy out. But you can tell by the degree of effusiveness of the praise.
That's exactly
whether
right.
It's just boilerplate praise or if it's, oh, here's a story about how CJ was awesome as a teammate or how CJ was awesome. Yes. As a guy to coach and all that.
Yep. Yep.
That's probably it. That might be the simplest thing is like, okay, do they offer up a story?
Yeah.
About it versus like, well, yeah, he completed all the requirements. Yes.
Checked all the boxes. Here's Travion Henderson, running back from Ohio State that I've seen going anywhere late first into the third round. Good player. Unfortunately for him, plays a position that's not extremely valued. But this was Travion Henderson on C.J. Stroud.
C.J. Stroud, man, that's my brother, man. We definitely keep in touch every now and then. I know he has Xavier Johnson down there, and they've been, you know, having a lot of godly conversations, man. And just, hearing how both of them, man, are growing up there, the culture that is at Texas, man. I really love to hear about what they're doing, you know.
Have you met with them?
Yes, I did.
How'd it go?
It went good, man.
All right.
Okay, so both of those guys mentioned his faith and his godliness. So in the power rankings of the power rankings of godliness, he's up there, which is the most important way to judge somebody's piety.
Yes.
Is the power rankings.
The power
of
rankings of godliness.
Yeah.
From Pope
Zaza.
So he's
competing at an elite level in that regard.
Yeah, someone texted you. This goes back to the movie Draft Day. You need to know if any of their teammates showed up at their birthday party.
Yeah. I've still never watched Draft Day.
Yeah,
I've watched like 5 minutes of Draft Day.
Oh,
yeah.
It's a pretty good guilty pleasure, I would say.
I don't know. It feels like so many people hate it that it, I don't believe the people that say that they loved it when they love it. I think they're just trying to be different.
Oh, I liked it. I liked
you
it.
You liked okay. it?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it seems like people can't get past the actual unrealistic nature of the trade.
Well, that's
right?
Their problem. Yeah. Like if you, okay. Yeah. Like, but that's the kitschiness
it's Hollywood,
of the movie.
Baby.
Yeah. That's the kitschiness of the movie, man. It's, yeah, yeah, it's very,
don't
unrealistic.
Be the cop that's watching a cop movie. That's like, well, actually that's not protocol or whatever. Yeah. Just
okay.
enjoy Hollywood for
so
Hollywood.
So based on what you've heard from people about the movie Draft Day, like the impressions you've got from people,
the Rotten Tomatoes score is a 67%.
65%. Give him a ding, Ben. Yeah.
Is that the audience score?
Which one's the one that has the popcorn next to it? Let's see. Tomato meter, popcorn meter. I'm guessing the popcorn meter is the.
That must be the new
the,
fan.
Is,
okay.
is the fans? Yeah, yeah. 65%.
And the, okay, wait. Then I'm guessing that the critics rating is 55%.
60%.
Okay.
Yeah, 60%. Give him a ding for that one too, Ben. Yeah, 60%. So yeah, the tomato meter is the critics, because there's over 25,000 popcorn meters. So people.
Hey, do you remember that Mike Meltzer and I interviewed the female lead in that,
Jennifer Garner?
Jennifer Garner. We interviewed her at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The New York Super Bowl.
Yeah.
About that. Because they were promoting that movie,
mm-hmm.
And she was very. We had a couple questions about her spouse at the time, Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
And she got like kind of put off that we were asking about anything other than her in the movie. Lo and behold, just not too long after that, it turned out that that marriage was not wasn't going to make it.
Yeah, yeah. Boy.
Mike and I like to take credit for driving a wedge between those two. So that was when it all went wrong.
That's funny. Well, you know my story. We interviewed Kevin Costner at that very same Super Bowl, and it was me. And Rich, and I think Travis Johnson, Ted wasn't with us yet on the show. That was like my first month at 610 in 2014. Uh-huh. And Costner is sitting next to me at our table. He's sitting like at the head of the table there, and I'm sitting to his right. And Rich is across the table from me, and he's asking Costner a question. And the question was fairly long-winded. and I had my phone sitting on the table right there in front of Costner. And as Rich is asking this long question, my phone rings. I don't know who it was, but Costner picks it up as if it's his phone. Uh-huh. And while Rich is asking the question, I kind of grab the phone from Costner and I just kind of mouth to him, like quietly, so it doesn't go, it's my phone. You know, I'm like, it's my phone. And he looks at me straight in my eyes while Rich is still asking this question, smiles, reaches out, grabs my left nipple and twists it really hard.
That's so hot.
It's... I'm like, what just happened? I took the phone out of Costner's hand and he twisted my left nipple.
You got sexually harassed?
Like, really? Like, well, here's the funny follow-up to that is a year later, he came to town with his band. You know, Kevin Costner was a traveling musician for a while.
Yeah, I bet they're awesome.
These are the things you can do. They were not. These are the things you can do when you have $100 million in the bank is you can play fantasy camp. So he came to town with his band. We got a call from the promoter for that concert, called the hotline and said, hey, Costner is in town tonight. I think it was down at the... in Stafford at that whatever the financial center down there.
Yeah.
And they said, do you want Costner on the show today? And we said, yes, of course we want Kevin Costner on our show today to promote this concert. So we're talking to him and he can't see us obviously, so that, you know, like it's just over the phone. And while he's answering one of the questions about music, Rich, we all hit mute and Rich is like, you have to bring up him twisting your left nipple at the Super Bowl and see if he remembers that. So I did, and he remembered it. And he invited us to the show to go backstage with him at the show.
It's probably a good sign that he remembered it, because otherwise it would have just been one of thousands of nipples that he had twisted.
One of many
randomly.
Nipples, yeah.
Yeah, we probably would have heard more about Kevin Costner, some of his off-field shenanigans.
It was pretty fun.
You know where he messed up on that, though, Sean?
Oh.
There was a chance that he was just going to answer it and be like, hey, this is Kevin Costner, to whoever was calling you, and or FaceTime him or something like that, which would have been pretty cool. So You kind of screwed over whoever was calling.
Well, I did,
you
but we're in the middle of the interview, which would have made it still a moment. That would have been great. No, you're right. I messed up, but it was fun meeting him backstage at his concert.
Was he angry when he twisted your nipple?
No, he was smiling. Yeah, he was. He seemed happy to be twisting my nipple.
Do you think he was on something?
No. I think he just looked at my nipple and said, that's a good-looking nipple right there. I'm going to give it a twist.
That's such a strange thing to do.
I know.
In so many ways.
Thank you. And then he remembered it?
I don't... Oh, thank God I'm not a Hollywood movie star. I feel like it takes you so far out of touch with what's normal.
How have you never reached across and twisted this nipple
The
right
nipple
here?
Of somebody that I'd known for 5 minutes in a formal interview setting.
You and I have known each other for 15 years
now. Oh, like, why have I never actually twisted yours?
Yeah, you and I have been in a studio...
Because I'm like Kevin Costner, I can control my urges and temptations.
For now.
That's why.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to come in shirtless someday and tempt you. And see
I've just watched a few clips from the SNL 50-year anniversary.
Yeah.
And he was in the audience. He had a little, they went to him once. And that dude, he's aging in reverse. He looks pretty damn good.
And he's got a lot of stress in his life. You know, like he went through an ugly divorce not all that long ago. Although sometimes a divorce can get you looking young again if you're getting out
Lovie
of a
Smith
bad enough
would tell race. You sometimes. Well, yeah, definitely gets you young again when all of a sudden you're back out there. Yeah.
So yeah, because Kevin Costner is going to have trouble getting laid. Yeah.
I'm guessing him being perpetually out there might have been one of the grounds for divorce.
Maybe. I don't know. I know nothing about that.
That's just a guess.
All right, let's get to acknowledge me. Let's do some acknowledgments from over the weekend. Big performances. We do it every Monday. I will say a name. And then Ben will hit the sounder.
Acknowledge me.
Roman Reigns. We actually have a little bit of wrestling in this acknowledge me. But let's start with football. And this is a name that Seth mentioned. It hasn't been a very buzzy combine compared to previous years. But we will acknowledge Gray Zabel.
Acknowledge me.
Crushed the workouts at the combine after crushing the Senior Bowl. If you're an offensive lineman from North Dakota State, you are doing everything you can possibly do right now to get yourself in the mix to be a first-round pick. Got an A- from CBSSports.com for his workout grades. And sounds like he may have, you know, made an impression compared to, you bring up Tyler Booker, who we're going to hear from later on this hour. Didn't have as good a workout. Kelvin Banks, a B. This Membu kid from Missouri blew everybody away. A+. But Gray Zabel, man, good for him. A-.
Yeah, Gray Zabel, he's been mocked to the Texans a few times, so he's in that mix of guards that might make it. If I had my choice between Tyler Booker and Gray Zabel at this point, I would take Tyler Booker. And like every like every prospect, they both have a lot of work to do, and it's I don't feel as comfortable projecting these guys because it's hard for me to watch the guards without thinking like, well, yeah, he's going to get destroyed if he plays like that in the NFL.
Right.
They have to get better. They have to get better their first couple of weeks in the NFL in training camp.
You made mention of Nick Imenwori. We'll acknowledge him. Yeah.
Acknowledge me.
He had the best workout for the safeties, and I saw he caught a lot of Texans fans' eyes because, hey, he plays safety, and it's hard not to think about, wow, he's 6'3", 220 pounds. You got Kalen Bullock back there as a true free safety, and you got this guy up in the box. That could be pretty damn impressive, and there's a good chance he'll be available when the Texans pick at 25. I guess the biggest question I would have is, it's not like I've watched all the games that all these the analysts have watched. There's a lot of reports of him not necessarily being all that consistent and kind of cruising at times, turning down contact and what have you. So, but there's other times where he does embrace the physicality. So I'd be really intrigued by what D'Amico thinks of his swarm rating. It just how much he fits into the culture and everything.
How big a need is safety for this team, do you think?
It's a good, well, I feel like they've got three potentially, because I think Kalen Bullock's going to develop into a very good safety. I think they've got three potential studs already that it's not, it would be awesome to have four studs back there, or three potential studs in the defensive backfield, excuse me.
Not at safety, yeah.
To have a fourth one would be awesome, but I don't put it way up there on the needs board right now.
Yeah. I guess
they gotta have somebody to compete at least.
Yeah.
You just can't pencil somebody in there right now.
Well, especially Jimmy Ward, he's hurt all the time. You know, that's
right. Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy Ward hasn't had to play anywhere near a complete game season in the last 3 years.
Yep. D'Amico Ryans.
Acknowledge me.
He got acknowledged by Sean Payton. He said Sean Payton was asked at the combine which coach would win the bench press competition among head coaches, in his opinion.
Sean, think of every coach in the National Football League. Who's winning the bench press?
Who's winning the bench press? All right, so I got to go with D'Amico still, right? I mean, I think I just saw him earlier today. Let me think of the new guys hired.
I love that you think of the new. Why? You have to be young?
No. I just want to make sure I'm not missing anyone.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to work backwards. I'm going to go with D'Amico Ryans. Absolutely.
All right.
I think he's got the right arm length, which is important. You know, if you're too – one of the things that's difficult when we test the bench here, and if you said, hey, give me the top 20 bench press results, I don't know that you're going to find a really good football player benching that weight 46 times because there's an arm length issue. And so – I think D'Amico probably has the perfect strength and length.
Yeah, so what he's referencing there is the guys that have awesome bench press numbers tend to have short arms, which tends to be a bad thing for football players, especially offensive linemen. So the offensive linemen especially, it drives me insane when I see the scouting reports where they're like, incredible upper body strength, weakness, short arms.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's why those guys don't pan out. So the problem is here that we have historical evidence, and my first thought was, okay, Dan Campbell might be in contention.
Yeah.
Dan Campbell's got longer arms than D'Amico, but Dan Campbell did 25 reps at the combine, whereas D'Amico did 23.
Okay.
And I think Campbell still looks like he does meathead workouts, where D'Amico's, D'Amico's tried to scale back a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'd have to give it to Dan Campbell.
I would too.
One.
I'd go Campbell on that one as well. All right, next one, Nick Caserio.
Acknowledge me.
WWE disruptor. Nick Caserio went on the Pat McAfee show last week, and McAfee, who is, in addition to his radio show, he is the color analyst voice for, I forget if it's Raw or SmackDown, one of the WWE shows, but he was on their pay-per-view this weekend, which we'll get to in a second. He brought up the road to WrestleMania with Nick Caserio.
Have you been able to pay attention? We're on the road to WrestleMania. He brought it up earlier. Have you been able to pay attention?
Not as much as I probably should have. Do I need to know anything?
Did you hear the Rock proposition?
Yeah. So LA Knight and The Miz, aren't they like the same person? Like they're like in the ish.
The Miz is watching right now.
One is a little more jacked.
Cleveland guy. So he's probably going to be like that jackass. What's he talking about?
Yeah, The Miz is watching this. He's texted me already like 30 minutes ago. So he definitely just heard that.
So
Miz is going to be so... Yeah, maybe if he does it for 20 years.
So The Miz and LA Knight, two WWE superstars, I guess are in the midst of a feud that may lead to WrestleMania here, them fighting at WrestleMania. And so, yeah, so Nick was joking around, like, aren't they basically just the same guy? Because they are very similar. The Miz takes to Twitter after this, right after the interview. Hey, Nick. The Miz, by the way, who has millions of followers. Hey, Nick, the difference between me and LA Knight, 2 world titles, 8 intercontinental titles, 9 tag team titles, U.S. title, 2 Money in the Bank titles, first ever 2-time Grand Slam champ, and a hell of an actor and a hell of a golfer. Hashtag I'm awesome.
I wonder if The Miz was watching or listening specifically because Nick Caserio is coming on, and Nick Caserio will talk about WWE stuff.
When they're both Cleveland guys, too, The Miz and Nick Caserio. Yeah, maybe. You know, McAfee, I think a lot of those WWE guys really like the McAfee show because McAfee's in the building with them on WWE stuff.
Yeah. I'm not saying that he wouldn't have been watching or couldn't have been watching just regularly or whatever, but especially for, I wonder if Nick's appointment listening for people who are fans of the show, but also super hardcore into wrestling.
He's good on that show when Nick goes on there. He's pretty loose on McAfee. So we acknowledge Nick. John Cena.
Acknowledge me!
And so we're about to get a little WWE here, but this is big. This was the number one trending topic all weekend and still is. John Cena, WWE superstar, long the face of WWE for good guys, set the record for Make-A-Wish wishes granted across everybody in the world. Like, he is the ultimate, like... baby face.
Okay.
Yeah, like
now, for Make-A-Wish, is that a WWE thing, or are you talking about the actual foundation?
The actual foundation,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
The,
so kids have requested him over and over.
Yeah,
and over.
Like,
okay,
he is a hero to kids everywhere. He's heading in the home stretch. This is his last year in WWE. This would be the equivalent of, like, Derek Jeter announcing his last year, and he's, you know, so Cena's going to be on all these shows through the rest of the year. They had their big show on Saturday, Seth, the Elimination Chamber, which is 6 guys in a cage.
Yeah.
The winner faces Cody Rhodes for the championship at WrestleMania.
Okay. Is Cody Rhodes the current champion?
He's the current champion, yeah.
Okay.
Cody Rhodes is the current champion. And Cena wins. So Cody Rhodes is a good guy. He's like a really good guy. So is Cena. So you got these two good guys ready to fight each other. Cody comes out to congratulate Cena. Meanwhile, Cody's got this angle going on with The Rock, where The Rock, who everybody knows... he's playing a character on there called the Final Boss. He's on the actual board for WWE now. So they kind of morphed it into a character where he's sort of this evil boss.
He's like a Jim McMahon type.
A Vince McMahon type, yes. Yeah.
Him too.
Yeah, Vince McMahon type. And so the angle has been like, he's trying to get Cody to be on his side. I want you to be my champion, an evil champion. I want your soul, Cody. So The Rock wants an answer from Cody. Do I get your soul? Are you going to be my champion?
I will open my arms. You will come to me. You will embrace me as your brother. And I will embrace you as my champion. I want it all, Cody. I want your mind. I want your soul. And God have mercy, I need your soul. If the answer is yes, then the American Nightmare will live forever.
Yeah.
So he's like, so The Rock is kind of like an Emperor Palpatine here, huh?
Yeah, a little bit, yes. That's
like
a great analogy.
He's bringing you into the dark side? Okay.
Yes, yeah, he's trying to bring Cody, Anakin Rhodes over to the dark side, yes.
So both Cody Rhodes and John Cena are very popular as good guys.
Very popular as good guys. Cena might be the most popular good guy in the history of the company.
Okay.
And so Cena's in the ring while this is going on, okay? So he's just sort of standing and watching as Cody gives The Rock this answer.
I want it all, Rock. My soul no longer belongs to me. And you know why? Because I gave my soul to this ring and these people a long time ago. Hey, Rock, go f*** yourself.
Ooh. We don't see F-bombs.
Did you say purple nurple?
Yeah, no purple nurple. So we don't see it. So Cena's going crazy. pumping his fists. Yeah.
Oh, like saying, okay.
Yeah, yeah Cody. Yeah, yeah. yeah right. You go, right. Cody. And so Cena comes over to him and daps him up and hugs him. And Cody's back is to The Rock. So Cena's looking over Cody's shoulder, hugging him, looking at The Rock, has a big smile on his face, and then all of a sudden turns to like a sourpuss. And they turn to The Rock, and The Rock gives the throat-cutting signal to Cena.
Yeah.
Cena backs up and kicks Cody right in the guyons.
Oh, no way.
Right in the nuts.
So just not, so he's flipping sides, and he's doing it in a dirty way.
Flipping sides, and here's and flipping sides. And while these while the announcers are going crazy, he took The Rock's Rolex, which was a gift that Cody gave to him. It was Cody's dad's Rolex, and starts using it as brass knuckles, busting Cody's head open with it.
Wow.
Ripping his suit off of him and stuff. And here's what it sounded like.
What the? Oh, my God, John. What the hell are you doing? The final boss, John. What the hell? Always has a plan. It's a Rolex pole. And Cody could have had every Rolex he could have ever dreamed of. But instead, he's getting his ass beat by John Cena because the final boss said so.
McAfee's into it, man. Yeah, McAfee's into it.
Did the Rolex survive it?
I don't know
if the
Rolex survived.
Good advertisement for Rolex.
I don't know
if it didn't get cracked on that.
If you need it as a weapon, But Cody bled.
Punches.
Cody bled. Dude, Travis Scott was there. Travis Scott walked out with The Rock. Travis Scott laid a real punch into Cody. Cody had a shiner afterwards.
Really?
Travis Scott leaned down and just wound up and blasted Cody in the face.
Jeez.
So this got, why are we acknowledging this? It was the number one trending topic this weekend. Seth, this got, in the first 12 hours, 104 million views across WWE social media platforms.
Oh, wow. It's bigger than the final episode of MASH.
Yes, 104 million views. And if I were to contextualize this, for those of you who are mad that I'm wasting time on wrestling here, this would be like J.J. Watt all of a sudden beating the crap out of C.J. Stroud at the behest of D'Amico Ryans. Like, that's what this would be. Like, you
would
know,
it be at the behest of D'Amico Ryans, or would it be at the behest of, like, Bill O'Brien or Jack Easterby?
Or, yeah, maybe Jack Easterby, or...
Because The Rock's not a popular guy, right?
Right, like, yeah.
So
maybe
he's a villain now, right?
Yeah, maybe Easterby, yeah, something like that. But definitely, the J.J. Watt-John Cena analogy is one that's been made for many, many years.
Yeah. Do people, like, is there a big swath of WWE fans that don't like John Cena because he's such a babyface?
Yes. In fact, for many, many years, the chants in the crowd were very polarizing, like, because he was so white meat babyface that some fans would chant, "Let's go, Cena!" And then the rest would go, "Cena sucks!
Let's go, Cena!
Cena sucks!" So, yes, there are a lot of people that are very excited about this, to see him as a bad guy.
Uh-huh.
And he walked into the press conference afterwards, and whereas most people stay there and take questions for 10 minutes, Cena walks into the press conference, takes the microphone off the stand, drops it, and walks out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was pretty good, man.
So now he's going off to the dark side to learn the evil ways of the dark side.
The funniest part of this, which I think you'll appreciate, the Make-A-Wish part of this, the memes, were people posting videos of people like throwing people downstairs in wheelchairs and saying, "John Cena with his next Make-A-Wish kit."
Oh, jeez.
Very funny. Not throwing people downstairs in wheelchairs. The fact that people think that Cena would do that is very, very funny. So, yeah. So that was, man, I felt that needed to be acknowledged. 104 million viewers in the first 12 hours. It's a good piece of business, man, by John Cena and the WWE. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday. Mock draft injection time. And this particular mock draft injection, like a lot of them, a repeat candidate, but we're going to hear from that repeat draftee from the Combine, and we'll do that coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studio, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Are you going to recap the Oscars, too, somebody asked. No, I won't. I'm not an Oscars guy. So, no, we won't recap the... We won't acknowledge any actors or actresses or directors or producers on the show today. All right, mock draft injection time. Let's do it. Mock draft, we do one each and every day at 7:45. This one today, Vinny Iyer, who I think used to work for Pro Football Focus back in the day. I think he used to do some stuff covering the Texans, actually. I may be thinking of somebody else. He's with the Sporting News now, and he does a two-rounder here. The big one is the first round, though, and I know a lot of these are, you know, we're getting a lot of the same guys coming through with the Texans. The angles will change as we get to the free agency and as there's more and more visits and things like that. This particular one, yes, it's the most drafted player to the Texans with the 25th pick in Vinny Iyer's SportingNews.com draft. The Texans take Tyler Booker, guard, Alabama. Here is Tyler Booker from the combine on Will Anderson.
It would mean a lot to be on a team with Will Anderson. And, as I mentioned my leadership earlier, I've learned a lot of my leadership skills from Will. Being around a guy like that who loves the game of football, that's something hard to pass up on. Like in the game of football, not everybody loves it. I'm a guy who eats, sleeps, and breathes football, and as not everybody does. Some people play for the money, some people play just because they're good at it, but I love the game of football, and Will is another person who truly loves the game of football just as much as I do.
You know what, the first thing that struck me when you sent that interview was that, just like Will Anderson, he's a excitable fast talker. And maybe I'm a little too swayed by that because Will Anderson has been so good for the team. But I like it. I like it. Instead of a big, lethargic, dim-witted fat guy, I like a guy that actually sounds like he's got the energy to actually be all about football and be passionate about it. Because he's not as good an athlete as some of the other guys, but he's got good athleticism. It's just not great combine athleticism. And he's a bigger guy that has it in him to be a fundamentally sound player. He's got stuff he has to clean up. And there's certain things he got away with because he's just a big, strong guy. But if he can clean up the technical stuff, I'm not worried about his athleticism. He's just got to become a more refined player. And he's been doing it against really good competition for a long time. There's similar, the thing that makes me a little bit nervous is I said similar things about Kenyon Green, is that, man, Kenyon Green is a big, strong guy, but, you know, used his hands a little too aggressively and got called for it in college. You got to clean that up in the NFL. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But there's a lot to like about Tyler Booker.
Well, and from everything I've heard and seen, like, I love the personality. You know, I think the offensive line room needs an injection of what it appears Tyler Booker has in terms of just how much he loves football,
yeah,
the toughness, the swarminess of Tyler Booker. One more from Booker. This is Booker talking about picking up stunts.
Maybe in the past game, at the NFL level, at a high level, if you look at my tape, you can see me passing off games, calling out games beforehand, and that's due to my preparation throughout the week. Like, I really take pride in how well I prepare for the games and how well I prepare for stunts, because that's something that stunts really trickle down. So everybody does the stunts on Sunday, and those are going into the game plan for Saturdays in college. So really just preparing for those, and I'm looking forward to really stepping up as a pass protector as well.
Again, I'll tell you what. You know, one thing I liked about Kenyon Green when he was in college, I thought he did a good job picking up stunts. That, and there was, over the last couple of years, there's been this weird regression on the Texans offensive line and their ability to pick up stunts. I'm really, really hoping that a lot of that had to do just with them having confusing rules and just a bad scheme by Bobby Slowick in what they were asking them to do, because smart guys played like they were dumb, and that's always an indication to me that that's bad coaching. So with yes, it's good that Tyler Booker is very cognizant of all that stuff. You got to do it at the next level, and hopefully it goes along with a new offensive line coach who was last year's assistant offensive line coach, but also a new offensive coordinator.
That video was up this weekend on Twitter, and I was like, you pick up stunts? You're hired. You're in. Yeah. We want you in the building. There was, when Booker got picked in this draft, a ton of the offensive linemen were still out there. Kelvin Banks, Ray Zabel, Donovan Jackson, all on the board. Matthew Golden on the board, too, at the time in this one.
I think they're in a really good position to where Nick always talks about finding bands of players, guys that he doesn't really try to get too persnickety about whether one prospect is totally better than this other one when they're for all intents and purposes equal, and that if they really want an offensive lineman, I think there might be multiple guys to choose from at 25. And that the maybe that means they trade back a little bit in the draft or they just go for it. I would prefer that he not get too cute and try to trade back to get into a band of players. If you like a guy, if you like a guard there at 25 and he's there, just by all means, just take him, Nick.
Yeah, yeah. In the second round in this two-round draft with the 59th overall pick, I don't know much about this player. I just think it's interesting. Ariante Ursary, who's an offensive tackle from Minnesota. It sounds like he's truly a tackle, where this would be competition for Blake Fisher, possibly a replacement for Tunsil down the road if they choose not to bring Tunsil back at some point. So I think it's interesting that this particular mock, it's O-line, O-line with the first two picks. No wide receiver, no defensive lineman, overloading on offensive line. Scary thing about this particular mock draft, Seth, is the very next pick. The Ravens are drafting Benjamin Morrison, the cornerback out of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Who, if he hadn't hurt his knee this year, would probably be a top 10 or 15 pick. He's one of the best cornerbacks in the country. And the Ravens are getting him at 59 or 60 right here, whatever it is.
There's a classic Ravens move. Yep. And he'll be all pro in his rookie season.
He will. That knee's going to get better at some point, you know? So, yeah.
I think we haven't seen it reflected in the mock drafts. Yesterday, I spent about 15 minutes trying to find a mock draft that took, for the Texans, anybody other than an offensive lineman, a defensive tackle, or a wide receiver. And I couldn't find any in that.
Did you find a leprechaun while you were at it?
Yeah. Like, I'd like to start seeing some. And maybe after free agency, it'll start happening. If the Texans go out and pick up a wide receiver in free agency or an offensive lineman in free agency, then maybe some of these mock drafts will change. But that Emmanuelle, the safety out of South Carolina, there was at least a buzz on the social media I was seeing amongst Texans fans that were really intrigued by his impressive workout.
The Texans met with a handful of tight ends.
In
Indianapolis, and one of them is Colson Loveland, who is viewed as the consensus number two tight end in this draft. Behind Tyler Warren of Penn State is the far and away number one. It seems like Colson Loveland out of Michigan is a guy who's going right, like most mock drafts I've seen, Seth, like just before the Texans pick. He's going like Denver at 20. He's going to, you know, the Chargers at 22, I've seen.
Yeah.
But he's somebody that the Texans met with, and I think tight end is a position of need on this team.
You know where I feel like he fits the culture perfectly was for the Texans on offense. He got injured at the combine. How did he get injured? False start on his 40. So there you go. He fits right in.
Oh, yeah?
He can do the false starts. He can get injured. Here we go.
You might be thinking, okay, it may have happened to him, too.
Is that not Colson Loveland?
It was Haim from Texas.
You talking about
the kid who he tweeted out the pictures of the ankle.
Oh, that was, yep, you're right. That wasn't Loveland. I got that mixed up. Thank you.
That was Haim from Texas, who, to your point, still did all the drills. I thought that was pretty badass. It was a nasty-looking ankle twist, man. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. That's our mock draft injection. More Tyler Booker love from the Mockers. All right, a little trip recap from our trip to West Palm Beach. Things that baseball and non-baseball that we saw down in West Palm Beach. One thing we didn't get to see because it happened on Saturday, but could be a huge development for the Houston Astros. We'll recap that as well as we head into the 8 o'clock hour coming up next.